Hello, creepies, and welcome to another middle-aged mini-episode on the Middle-Aged and Creeped Out podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hey, creepies, welcome to Middle-Aged Mini number 97. Nate is your sound engineer, and we are your hosts, Todd and Sean, and we are middle-aged and creeped out. Gentlemen, what's going on?
Yes, sir.
Alrighty.
Almost 100.
Getting there.
But not.
But not quite.
We can see it from here, right?
It's within distance, but it's still got three more to go.
That's right.
That's weird, though, man.
Yeah.
Almost 100 minis.
I like it when you verify that we're middle-aged and we're creeped out, because we are.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Guilty as charged, right?
And hence, we have a podcast called Middle-Aged and Creeped Out.
It's all coming together now, right?
I like when I tell somebody, like, oh, what's the name of your podcast? Middle-Aged and Creeped Out, and they do that little chuckle, like, oh,
yeah,
that's good. I'm like,
almost everybody does, yeah.
I'm just now getting it.
You know what's what's interesting?
See, Nate, we're... Nate's been wearing the whole time.
I've had a couple people like, well, I'm not middle-aged, or I don't like creepy stuff. But then when you posted our demographics, you know, that men and women are equal, which I thought was really cool. And then the most listened ages were like 18 to 25, and then 25 to 35 or 45 or something.
You don't have to be middle-aged to listen to it.
I know. Which is hilarious. But I thought that was really cool. You know, you just don't think about the breakdown.
No, you don't. All right. Well, anyway, that's good. That's our Nate. You got to wrap.
That's
wrap
a good song.
Yeah. Breakdown.
I just
go
heard
ahead.
That last night.
Give it to him.
Tom Petty.
Breakdown.
Ooh. All right. Hey, creepies. We are so glad you are joining us. Mini number 97, and we're going to get right to it. Sean.
Yes.
Tell our creepies what we're going to talk about.
Well, this is a topic that I'm going to give credit to Daniel Bouts, our good friend.
Daniel Bouts.
Author. Oh. If I could talk. I have heard. Yes, he is awesome. And he had recommended that we do this either as a mini or a Tuesday Terror. And I'm like, this would be a great Tuesday Terror. No, I'm just kidding. Mini. just kidding.
Why are we doing a mini?
So here we go as a mini, right?
All right.
It is The Vampire of Croglan Grange.
Croglan. You know, I want to say Coglan. It's easier, but Croglan.
Croglan. This is very English.
Very Croglan.
It sounds made up. I'll just be honest with you.
That's yes, it gets.
Crumpet. All right.
So The Vampire of Croglan Grange is a vampire legend that took place in Cumberland, England. The story first appeared in Story of My Life by Augustus Hare, written in the 1890s, yesteryear, right? In 1929, Montague Summers republished the story along with the first chapter of Varney the Vampire. Now, that does sound made up.
Varney?
Varney the Vampire.
We
should have done
Varney.
I love you.
Yeah.
I bite you.
Yeah.
You bite me. This is great. All right. He pointed out that the two stories were very similar and should be dismissed as folklore. So whether this is real, whether it's not real, it makes for a great story.
Maybe part of it is.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it isn't.
All right.
See, I'll meet you halfway.
So
most stories come from a little bit of truth.
Yeah.
Well, a little bit.
Truth is in the eye of the beholder, right?
Nate was so serious when he said that. Let me tell you something.
I was trying.
A little bit of... Hold on here. Wait a minute.
You're going to get down to a macho man if you're not careful.
Let me tell you something.
Don't get me started. All right.
I love it when you do that, though.
All right. So...
I'm going to give a little summary, and we'll talk about it from different angles. I watch a lot of videos on different perspectives, but the basic summary of it in this tale written by Augustus Hare, several episodes took place between 1875 and 1876. An old house had been rented out to a woman and two brothers, Amelia, Edward, and Michael Cranswell. During one summer, Amelia was trying to sleep when a strange creature appeared at her window and began picking out the lead surrounding one of the window panes with a long fingernail, then removing it and putting its hand through the resulting gap to undo the window latch and let itself in. It was described as having a brown face and flaming eyes. The vampire bit her in the throat. When her brothers came to the room, the monster was gone. While one brother tried to help his sister, the other went after the creature. So they had to, after a trip to Switzerland, the three returned to Grogling Grange, and the creature returned again. The brother shot it in the leg and was able to track it down to a vault in the local cemetery. They waited until the next day to enter the vault, where they found the body of the vampire with a fresh wound to the leg resting inside a coffin. They then burned it. It says a version of the story also appears under the title The Window in Alvin Swartz and Stephen Gamble's More Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark in 1984, which I remember those.
Why do they burn him or the
They the burned vampire. The vampire that the had vampire, the, okay. The
I thought wounded. They said burned it. And I was like,
there is one version of the story told the from the brother's vantage point was they heard the sister screaming. And they went into her room, and this creature was on her and had like her the blood was like gushing from her neck, and so it jumped out the window. And they, like I said, one brother helped her, and one went after the creature. But the creature was like super fast, and you know got away. And then so they did stop her bleeding, but it was not easy to do. Then they, like I said, that once they got her well enough, they took her to Switzerland to heal even longer, but they really liked this place. So they came back when they healed from Switzerland. It's like, I wouldn't go back there for all the tea in China. But, so then it happened again because from her vantage point, it was a really hot summer day apparently. And they had been outside. It was a full moon too. So you could see really well outside. And that's where the details of some of this makes it sound like more real than, you know, like this is very detailed for this kind of story. But she said it was so hot that she had laid, she was up on the, you know, the second story or whatever this of the their home, and she had the windows open. They had been out looking at, you know, the evening, like the moon and everything. And it was so hot. It was a hot summer day. And so she was laying on her covers. She could not go to sleep. So she decided to look out her window, and they're right next to a cemetery. And she saw these eyes, like the flaming eyes, and she said it just got closer and closer. And then it was making its way up to her room. And she, you know, latched the doors and all this kind of stuff to keep it out. And then it was, you know, proceeded to get in with her. And then it was trying to suck her blood out. So it was like disgusting. But the second time when it happened, she was smart enough to call for her brothers, you know, and just yell right away because she heard the scraping noise on her window and she wasn't messing around. So they came to her aid right away. They had guns, and then they made chase after it. It was fast, but they were able to shoot it in the leg. And then they said, since it was at night, they tried to track it, and they were able to track it where it went to another neighbor's home that had a crypt on it, you know, just like they were by a cemetery. This had like a family crypt, and they didn't want to mess with it at night. So they decided to gather more people and come back in the morning. And when they came back, they said in this crypt were all these like coffins and stuff that were just like a mess and like had been, you know, like destroyed. But one had not been messed with and it was slightly open. So when they went into that crypt, they opened it up and this, you know, being was there and it had been shot in the leg, like a fresh wound on it. But it was obviously in, you know, asleep or whatever, you know, during the daytime. So they took it and you'd think they would like hack it to death, cut the heart out and all that stuff. But they said they took it outside and burned it. So it couldn't do that again. But it was just like, it's just such a creepy story, you know. But yeah, it's been refuted and all that kind of stuff too. That
you drag it out of here. No, you drag it out.
All right.
You drag it out of there.
I wonder if they did then rock, I'll burn paper, it. Scissors.
I'm not touching
it. All right.
Thing.
Best two out of three.
Dang it. Paper covers rock.
Well, I mean, the sister, wouldn't she turn into a vampire?
What? I would think so. Like in vampire lore,
we don't know
right?
Anything else.
She did not though. Maybe he didn't suck enough blood out. It's very...
he sucked at his job.
Bram Stoker's Dracula feeling, though, to it. You know, that definitely gets
it in backwash.
I want to suck your blood. Oh. It's several...
vampire backwash.
several depictions of what this thing looked like. It looked anywhere from a weird, strange little old man that was like creepy to your traditional vampire to a skeletal, you know, corpse that was running around, which is apparently what partly it was. So they called it a phantom and they called it a creature, and then it really links back to being a vampire because it was trying to suck her blood from her neck. So
seems like it's compared to the Nosferatu.
Oh, absolutely.
Back in the silent.
Yes, with like the where it gives me that the creeps of the shadow of you know with the claws and everything going up the stairs. Uh-huh, exactly.
That's might be something to it.
There was a Charles G. Harper challenged the Hair book in 1924 after visiting the area. He found no evidence that Croglan Grange ever even existed, but did, however, find two similar buildings called Croglan High Hall and Croglan Low Hall. Neither fit the description of the place in the book. Eventually, after a lot of research, he came to the conclusion that Croglan Low Hall was the place Hare had referred to in the book, even though a chapel had not existed nearby for many years.
Mm.
So I thought that was really strange. They did too, but
I'd never heard of this. So when you suggested to do this topic, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, me a vampire. Yeah, like Nate said, I mean, it could be something to it. Who knows? It is a good story regardless.
Oh, whether it's absolutely completely
fiction or
I think it would make for a good a good movie, you know?
I would. It would, yeah.
Man, this little bit that I'm reading, the show, it says that, breaking them manor houses and plunge its teeth into the necks of young women who would then have the weirdest urge to return back to Croglan.
Yeah. So yeah, they wanted to go back.
Why would you do that, right? Mm-hmm.
What in the heck are you doing?
We've talked about those Penny Dreadfuls before, and that's kind of where this came from, too. It said, Penny Dreadful Stories and Legends. The Croglan vampire was said to have been at least a couple centuries old. Perhaps this story is merely a story. However, Hare portrayed it as based on truth. A popular form of literature or storytelling at the time was the type one found in the Penny Dreadful pamphlets. These were works of fiction that usually were about pirates and highwaymen in Gothic style. The following story the story that they talked about with the Croglan vampire is the example of this, Victorian equivalent of an urban legend, basically. So, but they said a lot of people still think that it's true or has some truth to it, like Nate was pointing out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were talking about they dragged him out to burn him. It says the brothers, or more likely their tenants, knew there was only one way that a vampire could be quiet. They called it quietened. Wow. They dragged the hideous corpse out of the crypt with the intention of burning it. Some say they pulled the vampire towards a holly tree in the churchyard, as holly was considered by the local folklore as beneficial in such an operation. There they incinerated the dreadful cadaver, and all the outrages of the Croglan vampire ceased. You can still see the holly tree stump in Croglan churchyard. Ooh, very cool. Put that on the list.
Absolutely.
We'll visit the Croglan.
This is an interesting paragraph here.
What you got?
The Croglan vampire is a strange tale of villagers breaking open vaults determined to destroy the beast, of vampiric bats flying out of churchyards, of vampiric corpses burnt next to sacred holy bushes, of escaped asylum inmates, of bitter religious conflict, and of starving circus monkeys rampaging through the Cumberland landscape. It's also a tale that ends with a bricked-up window festooned with lucky horseshoes, an alteration designed to stop the entry of any similar creatures.
Did you say circus monkey?
You said starving, sure did. Starving circus monkeys.
Starving circus monkey. I always find those really so hard to
blood
find.
Sucking.
So we got horny hedgehogs, starving circus monkeys. Monkeys
rampaging.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a great explanation for this, though.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It's believable.
Well, the story just came together. Just no, it all makes sense. Wow.
That stopped us in our tracks yet again.
Starving circus monkeys. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. That's what, yeah.
It said Augustus Hare claimed that Captain Fisher had told him this really extraordinary story connected with his own family. The Fisher family had a long-standing presence of several hundred years in Cumberland and at this place called Croglan Grange. The family eventually grew out of their house, thus they decided to relocate to the south, but instead of leaving their property vacant, they chose to lease it out to paying tenants. The Cranswell siblings, two brothers and a sister, took up residency in the single-story house. Winter came and went without incident. The following summer was a muggy one. On one oppressively hot night, the tenants took the opportunity to watch the moon, like I was saying, that full moon, before finally turning in. The sister Amelia lay on her bed on top of the covers and closed the bedroom doors. The shutters remained unlocked, though. Then that's when she was unable to settle down in the heat. Amelia gazed out the window. A church, complete with its own graveyard, stood beyond a line of trees. Her eyes caught a glimpse of something concealed in the twilight. Two flickering lights seemed to be moving around among the copse of trees visible from her window. She was intrigued at first, but the longer she watched, the more nervous she began to feel. In a moment, both lights started to emerge from the tree line and into her view. It looked as though the lights were a small part of a more substantial form, a humanoid form. Can you imagine that coming at you?
Oh, yeah.
Be like, are you kidding me? I think I would have went and hid under my brother's bed or something at that point.
The only thing more terrifying would be starving circus monkeys. Because you know how I mean, if they're starving and they're in a circus, they're
I could hear the sound.
The bloodlust would be there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're
going right for the jugular.
That's right.
Which is what happened, right? Man, I can't believe you figured this out.
Yeah.
Mystery solved. How many mysteries have we solved? Zero. This is one, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, no, we did add crop circles, right? So that's two.
Yeah.
Go us.
All right. I have the detailed story of it, and I've sort of read ahead and it's given me some chills, so I thought I'd read some of it. Amelia's heart was now pounding. This is after she saw the eyes in the cemetery coming towards her house. Her heart was now pounding. Shivers were passing over her skin, and she knew she had to get away. The room's door was, however, near the window that the beast was approaching, and Amelia knew that unlocking it would put her closer to the creature for a moment. She wanted to scream, but her throat seemed paralyzed. Her tongue felt clamped in her mouth's roof. The being then turned aside and appeared to stumble away from her window. Amelia had the impression it was going around the house and wasn't coming for her at all. Breaking out of the terror that had made her motionless, Amelia leapt from the bed, dashed to the door, and fumbled the key into the lock. But then she heard a scratch, scratch, scratch upon the window and saw a hideous brown face with flaming eyes glaring in at her. She rushed back to the bed, but the creature continued to scratch, scratch, scratch. Somewhere in the panic of her mind, Amelia knew, at least, that the window was locked, so the creature was unlikely to gain entry. The scratching did indeed stop. But now there came a pecking sound. An awful realization flooded over Amelia. The beast was unpicking the lead that held the window in the frame. The peck, peck, pecking went on until the pain fell into the room, shattering into diamonds on the floor. Then the long, bony finger of the creature came in and turned the handle of the window, and the window opened. The creature clambered in and strode across Amelia's room, but her terror was so great that she could not scream. It came up to her bed, and it twisted its long, bony fingers into her hair, and it dragged her head over the side of the bed, and it bit her violently in the throat.
Mm. That detail's crazy. It's interesting. They pointed out that she was not a superstitious person, so she didn't believe, at least initially, that it was some kind of a creature of the night. That's why she thought it was like a lunatic, you know, escapee or whatever, or the monkey.
That's circus monkey.
Circus monkey.
That's a starving.
It's starving.
Circus monkey. Get it right.
With flaming eyes. Brown face, right?
That's right.
But it said also the story was challenged by another researcher, F. Clive Ross, in the 1930s. Ross took the time to interview the locals and came to the conclusion that Croglan Low Hall was actually Croglan Grange. The Grange did have a chapel on the grounds, which was built on the foundation of an earlier church. One of the locals that Ross interviewed was a lady called Mrs. Parkin. This resident of Anstable claimed to have personally known a descendant of the Fisher family. Mrs. Parkin indicated that he was born in the 1860s and knew the vampire story from his grandparents. The lady was also revealed that the deed to the property stated that until 1720, Croglan Low Hall was Croglan Grange. So that's kind of interesting. Then there's also some more evidence. Journalist Lionel Fanthorpe conducted a more recent investigation into the authenticity of Croglan Vampire. His results suggest that some events could be genuine. Fanthorpe believes that someone demolished a grange or farmhouse during the lifetime of Oliver Cromwell. If the story is true, then it is much more likely to have taken place sometime in the century before the deed was altered. So there's a little bit of could be made up. Part of it may not be. I love the details that are included. And that's like what you were saying. It's just, it's such an interesting story though. So Daniel did a good job.
Yeah. Good recommendation. Daniel.
Good job, Daniel. Yeah.
Good job. Yeah. I like that story. I think there's, I think there's somewhere in the middle. There might be some truth to it.
So it's a good thing we did it as a Tuesday Terror, right?
That's right.
That's always been like a real scary thing as a growing up younger, you know, something tapping at your window or something.
Salem's Lot, man.
At your grange. At your grange.
Yeah, you want to grab a bat or something and be ready. Anything comes through that window, they're getting it.
Haven't we talked about that? It's also, that's why you keep your feet under the covers, because if you do that, nothing can get you.
Yeah.
Same line of thinking.
Yeah, something's under the bed. Put my head under the covers. It doesn't know I'm here.
Nowadays, I don't think about it as creatures. I think if it's like aliens. I'm like, oh, God, they landed. They're doing a midnight landing.
I think it's starving circus monkeys, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I hope.
Concur.
I hope so.
Thank you, Nate. Thank you. Yeah. You guys, did you hear about Barney the Vampire by... Montague Summers?
Montague?
I think I heard about him once or twice or three times this episode.
Yeah, he was referenced a few times.
Yeah. Anything else?
I don't think so.
That's a good way to wrap it up. But Nate, speaking of wrapping it up, what do you have?
This one goes out to all the starving circus monkeys. And that's a wrap.
This one's for you.
I know they'd appreciate that, Nate.
Well, I don't want them coming after me.
No. Although I'd rather
have them. They work hard. I appreciate them.
Yeah. I'd rather have them than the horny hedgehogs, but hey.
Vigorous.
That's right. Vigorous. I knew I messed that up. Hey, we want to thank you, Creepies, for listening to our Middle Age Mini number 97 and our discussion on the Vampire of Croglan Grange. And until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
See ya.